Joining me on Beyond the Playlist is Virgil Donati. He is well known as a drumming legend in the music world. Virgil, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Hammond. Great to be here.
I am so thrilled to have you on. You were one of my bucket list interviews when I started this show back in 2013.
Well, really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine why, actually.
See, here's the thing is I'm kind of a music nerd. And there are certain people who have struck my fancy as being artistically gifted in the work they do. And I've been familiar with your work for a while. And when our mutual friend Kayleen said that she knows you and plays with you, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's on this list I made back when I started the show of people I wanted to interview. Your history in music is kind of documented, but tell me a little bit, for those that don't know, tell me a little bit about how you got started as a musician and kind of where you got your start.
Okay, well, I had a lot of early exposure because my parents were both musicians. My dad was a keyboard player, pianist / accordionist. Mum was a singer and my uncle was a drummer. There were always rehearsals around the house. I mean, from when I was very, very young, they usually sat me on the ground because I wanted to participate, and I'd sit against the wall and I would just listen and observe. And I still have clear memories watching the band rehearse. Eventually they bought me some toy drums and small toy drumsticks, and I would start tapping along. And then I remember so clearly one day my uncle said to my parents, why don't you just buy him a drum set? So it all started from there. And by that time, by that stage, I was, I still hadn't turned three. So I was two and a half or so.
Wow. So your internal clock was keeping good time right from the start.
It had quite a bit of evolution to go through from that point. But yeah, I was feeling something. I was feeling something. And, you know, it's hopefully come a long way from there.
How old were you when you started your first official band?
Oh, God. Well, I started playing live from the age of three with my father because Dad was a very busy musician around town. And for those who don't know, I grew up in Melbourne, Australia. So there was quite a lively nightclub scene, even back in the days. We're talking about 60s. And my dad would work through the night. He would go from one venue to another. And they had these little special events called floor shows, which is like a little showcase where, you know, a special guest would get up and either sing or whatever, along with my dad's band. So a few times my dad would bring me up. I remember being woken up in the middle of the night by one of my cousins and whisked off to this club that Dad was playing in. And I'd join him on stage and play and kind of do a little dance routine and then go back home to bed. You know, it was strange. But that's my earliest live experience. So it started fairly early.
When did you actually start your own musical band, like started your own musical journeys?
Oh, well, there were quite a few. As I was growing up, I teamed up with, at one point, the earliest memory was there was this very talented young accordionist, also grew up in Melbourne, Italian, Australian as I was. And we joined forces and started touring a little. So I was probably 9 or 10 at the time. And that was my earliest touring experience. And then from there, I joined certain club bands and kind of grew up and got experience. And by the time I was 16, I was ready to hit it with a band. So I joined a band called Cloud Nine, later to become Taste. And we that was my earliest recording experience. We were signed to RCA and released records and singles, and I started touring Australia from that age. So that was probably the first serious band.
Wow.
Playing original music, and that's where my writing experiences began. And from there, it just never ended, really.
As far as a musical education goes, I mean, with all of the hands-on experience you had, was there a desire or a need to do like actual academic study, or was this all, was your training all on the job?
Well, I'd have to say it was mainly on the job. When I was 19, I came to the US for the first time, and I actually enrolled. At the time, there was a great music school in LA called Dick Groves Workshops, I think that's what it was called. And I enrolled and took classes, you know, like arranging, composition, piano, and big band drumming. And I kind of did that for about 6 months to a year. That was probably my only formal training. The rest was just some private lessons growing up and on the job.
As you were developing as a drummer, how did you go about developing a style that's yours? Because as a drummer, you can still be very musical and very stylistic. So how are you able to start that evolution from being just keeping time to actually being a musician?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. The only way I can think to answer it is in a very esoteric way. I mean, you just have faith in what you're doing. You work day to day, week to week, month to month, and you keep developing your skills. There are so many levels. I mean, you know, the creative process, it takes years for the creative process to evolve. So, you know, at various times, our attention shifts from the physical and mechanical challenges, which drumming often confronts us with, to the musical and rhythmical challenges. And eventually we learn to respond and interact with other players. So it's a very drawn-out process. And somehow along that road, to be honest with you, I didn't even consciously think of it. I subconsciously thought that hopefully I would have a particular sound and style. And eventually that starts to shine through. And I guess it's different for everyone, the way that comes about.
It is. And that's actually one of the reasons why I ask it, is because everyone's journey into kind of their musical voice or their creative voice, everyone's journey is a little bit different. Sometimes it's a very conscious move where they're working at it daily to, you know, push those muscles and stretch those wings. And other times it's very subconscious and it's very kind of a natural evolution of just moving through things and conquering one challenge and moving on to the next one. And that's one of the reasons why I ask, is it's everybody's journey to that is so unique and so personal.
Yes. And I was definitely in the latter group. So ultimately, you know, like feelings are the central force in generating great music. I mean, in music, we often talk about feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? So when I say the word feelings, I'm talking about something more than just feel, which is your concept of time and your approach, the way you sit down and articulate your ideas. But feelings I also mean the spontaneity, the improvisation, all the nuances. That's what I've been concentrating on for a long time now. So it goes beyond ideas. So ideas are preconceived, but being able to unite those qualities of ideas and that spontaneity improvisation is always a work in progress. I don't think there's ever an end to that process.
Well, I don't think so either, because as someone who's done creative things and someone who's pushed myself in creative ways, I feel like there's really never any end zone for you to throw the ball down and spike and dance in. It's always just the next challenge, whether it be a new technique or a new flavor of the instrument or whatever it is you're working toward. There's always that next obstacle creatively. And I feel like as a as someone with a creative inclination, there really is never a moment where you sit back and survey all the things your domain and celebrate, because there's just another challenge around the corner.
Exactly. And this happens on a daily basis. And I think that's why we have this constant need to renew our connection with our instrument every day. Mm-hmm. If you're inspired, if you're motivated, that's something you look forward to on a daily basis. And that's why we practice and practice and practice and hopefully work a little along the way, do some gigs when they're in vogue and out of pandemic times. But look, it's intriguing. It's intriguing, you know, the challenge of being creative.
So how do you choose how you're going to approach every project and how you're going to construct your kit for that project?
Apart from fundamentals, basics, like if I'm in studio recording a project, I'll assess, you know, what snare drum am I using? Do I need a few different cymbals? What ride am I using? It's usually the snare and the ride. I don't alter my setup a great deal. And in terms of how I approach it mentally, musically, it goes back to feel.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. Yeah. I react. And that's just a spontaneous process.
When you sit down with a group to perform, what kind of questions do you ask so that you can be the best drummer for them that they need or that you can be? What kind of questions and information do you seek from them so that you can mesh with them the best you can?
Oh, God. Again, you know, I think it's quite simple, really. I mean, it comes back to being reactive. So earlier, I think I said something about learning to respond and interact with other players.
Uh-huh.
Well, that just comes with experience, with doing it over and over, and that's why we always talk in our musical circles about the importance of not only locking yourself in a room to practice, but getting together with other musicians, be it a bass player, a guitar player, or an entire band, and just playing as much as possible, because that is another dimension of your musicality that you need to work on, to develop.
I think that that's a key element, is that communication. I've been in musical situations where the communication was bad and things were at best weird, at worst horrific. And I've been in situations where the communication has been glorious, and situations that might not have been in any good turn out to be great just because people are talking through it, trying to figure things out.
Yeah. I just find that for me now at the levels and with the quality of musicians that I've been working with, they're, you know, all those kind of things kind of remain unsaid because everyone is so skilled at what they do. They're quite very experienced, and we all know how to interact. So much is really, our conversation is with our instruments. We don't need to talk about it so much.
You've been doing this for a long time now, and you're a professional and you're doing it. How much time do you spend pushing to learn new techniques or try to come up with new variations on things that are kind of tried and true, and kind of pushing yourself to improve, I guess would be the word. How much time do you spend on that?
Well, all my time. All my time is spent on that. You know, I get, you know, when I arrive at my studio, I walk in and I sit down and I just start improvising. You know, I'll have a set of, I won't call them exercises, but ideas that perhaps I'm working on any particular time that I want to develop and evolve and become more, feel like I have more control over it. So those ideas just lead me down rabbit holes. I'm just, you know, they lead me somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else. And so I continue working on those. And it's just beautiful because it's all spontaneous, you know. And then sometimes I have to notate some of these ideas because they leave you as soon as as quickly as you can imagine them. So it's quite interesting. So I'll either quickly hit record on my little memo on the iPhone just to remember a few bars of an idea, or I'll open Finale and jot down the idea. But so many of them I have to let go because it's just too many to try and document any day, and I just like to keep things rolling. But it's quite a process. It's quite remarkable right now. And so, look, the answer is I'm constantly doing that. In fact, that is the bulk of my practice now.
It's funny, when you talk about drumming, you make it seem so natural and kind of easy. And then on the other hand, you talk about the amount of work that you put into it to make it seem like it's natural and easy. And like all the drummers I know personally, I admire because they're doing math all the time as they play. And that kind of counting and that kind of awareness of time and your internal rhythms and everybody else's time and kind of rhythms as a group, that kind of stuff is super impressive. And I admire it to no end because it intimidates the crap out of me.
Yeah, time. It's interesting. There are so many nuances within the topic of time, you know, depending on each individual musician. You know, I think the brain tells time very differently from person to person. Perhaps we use different mechanisms for different time scales, but there is so, you know, that's why that it's, you know, there's this beautiful world of drummers and the way they express rhythm and their concept of time and how everyone can play the same thing and sound so different, you know, it's remarkable, you know, how we can compress and expand time. Now, by that, I mean the space between each beat we play, for example.
Yeah.
There's a lot of space there. Can you imagine the variance, the small fluctuations from player to player, and how, you know, you find your own way of expressing that time. Mm-hmm. Just naturally through practicing and through habits that you've worked on or fallen into over the years, and perhaps sometimes even have to go back and undo, who knows, you know, but there's so many variants. It's remarkable.
And I've learned that, like, I played harmonica in college, and learning my internal breathing and controlling that and developing that so that I could have some control over that, so I don't pass out or hyperventilate, was a large part of the struggle I had becoming, you know, better at that instrument, was because I needed to become, you know, acutely aware of what my body did naturally, so I could kind of work with it or work counter to it for short periods of time in control.
Yeah. Correlate, you know, there are correlations, you know, mm-hmm. between, yeah, the breath, time, et cetera. So the way we express this time really is what creates the rhythms we play and how they feel. And of course, now I've been also experimenting a lot with, let's say, some contemporary rhythmic formations, mm-hmm. you know, something that's not as consonant as they were traditionally. I like to call them dissonant ones, you know, so dissonant rhythms, if there's such a thing. So you've got to work out, you've got to organize them in a mathematical relationship that gives them maximum expressivity and, I guess you could say, minimum debate against each other.
Yeah.
Meaning that you know, they're going to feel good the way they play. So it's still got to feel good. It's got to be rhythmic. It's got to have a groove to it, you know. So that's another challenge, something that I've been working through for many years right now, but constantly evolving.
And I'm sure that pushing yourself to continue to do things that would be new, unique and new and special. I mean, because you're sitting in a chair and you've got the tools around you, and as long as you've been doing it, I'm sure there's a ton of variations you've done, but pushing yourself to continue to create new variations and new patterns and new ways of doing things, I'm sure that's part of a struggle too. That way you're not just repeating yourself, because I'm sure that would get old after a while.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And one thing I do pride myself on is my constant renewal as an artist. I mean, if I look back randomly at some of my playing, say on YouTube from 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and then compare it to 15 years ago, and compare it to 5 years ago, it's radically different. And that's because I don't rest on my laurels. Sometimes I do let things go. You know, there are certain ideas that I might even look back on and go, oh, wow, I forgot about that.
I actually discovered some old tapes of me playing harmonica back when I was in college, and I had to keep checking it to make sure it was actually me, because I'm like, oh, wow, that guy was pretty good once upon a time.
Well, exactly, and I like that feeling, because it means that I'm not regurgitating. You know, it's like if I look back on something and feel that way, it means that I've moved in another direction, be it good or bad. But regardless, it's just that constant struggle for renewal, you know, and reinventing. And perhaps that will end someday, but right now, I can't see that happening.
You've played with some of the biggest legends in music. I mean, you've played with all kinds of people. Have you ever been starstruck by the people you've played with?
Well, I can't say I've been starstruck. The only one that comes close, I was perhaps a little starstruck with, was working with Alan Holdsworth. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, he's the one standout musician for me. That was such a big thrill to get the call from him. You know, I think everyone would agree what he's done with his instrument and with his music is pure genius. Yeah.
And talk about prolific and creating new things all the time and pushing himself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a revolutionary against the mainstream. Mm-hmm. He really was. He never went with the dominant trends. And I mean, probably to the extent that, well, he did. He reformed judgments about the practice, you know, in music and guitar playing that were really quite old. And he's touched so many people. Yeah. And I see it all around me now in obvious ways and sometimes in more subtle ways. But, yeah, a remarkable man. And for me, you know, having been part of his inner circle probably holds the most significance and relevance along that road,
yeah.
You know, of all the various situations I've played in.
And you've played with both modern and classic acts. You played with jazz acts. I mean, you play with fusion acts. You've done all kinds of things. So it's not like you are a particular type of drummer. You are a universal skill set. So you can play with or against anybody.
Yes. Yes. I've always felt the need to try and express myself musically in many, many ways. So I grew up listening and studying everyone and all music styles and playing, getting out and playing live. You know, growing up, like I said, in Melbourne, Australia, we had a very healthy live music scene. So I got to play a lot, like you said, in jazz situations, fusion, rock, pop, and played most of it at, you know, very high levels. You know, I was part of some very successful pop bands in Australia. And at the same time, I always was doing, you know, jazz and fusion gigs on the side. And that really helped me evolve as a complete musician.
And also, I can just say from personal listening that finding a drummer who can keep time is great, but finding a drummer who can keep time and be musical at the same time, that's a whole different skill set. And the number of drummers that can be musical, it's a very small number, in my opinion. And you're definitely in that.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment. Look, I think right now, musicians in all areas, drummers, bass players, guitarists, keyboard players, are really highly evolved at a younger age mm-hmm. than ever before.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing, the top tier of, you know, younger musicians, let's say from their mid to late 20s into their 40s, what they're doing now is just remarkable. So I think it's very encouraging for the future of musicians.
When you are not preparing for a gig and you're just kind of hanging out, who do you listen to? What do you listen to kind of just enjoy music? Or have you gotten to a point where you're always kind of analyzing and thinking about it?
My day is so involved with you know, music production in general and practice and writing, etc., and even trying to practice some piano. That's a lot of music. I don't find time anymore to listen so much. So basically my listening is restricted to you know, flipping through Instagram quickly and it's remarkable how many, you know, how much good, inspiring stuff you can pick up just by flipping through some clips quickly.
Yeah.
But literally, I don't get much time to sit down and really enjoy something. In the car, you know, I'll put on, and I find myself putting on a lot of classical. I love classical, like piano or symphonic music. And that I find a wonderful relief to everything else I do.
Well, as the world is preparing to open back up again, do you have tentative plans and ideas of what you want to do when you're able to get back out and do the things you do?
Yes. I'm setting myself up to spend more time in Europe right now, find setting up a studio there, and I might be spending more time there, perhaps dividing my time for the time being between LA and somewhere in Europe. I just want to get out and tour again, like, you know, 50,000 other artists do, at least.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting once the floodgate
opens. I have this feeling that there's going to be like these multi-day 25, 30 band festivals that all just pop up all over the place, and this pandemic rush to have everyone perform everywhere all over again.
Yeah. Might be a saturated market for some time.
Which means ticket prices will be low, which is would be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, but makes touring difficult. Yeah. There's, budgetary considerations are very crucial, especially if you're working at the club level. It's really difficult to tour, to employ musicians, a crew, throw in the rental, rentals and hotels. And it's just, it's so difficult. You've really got to try and maximize earnings out there to make it worthwhile.
Do you have any other projects you're involved in that are, going to peek out on the horizon anytime soon?
Right now, I've been working on, throughout the last year, I've worked on a few interesting recordings. And the newest one, which I think the first single has just been released, is by a wonderful songwriter, musician from Australia called Phil Buckle. And I played on his solo record, and that's worth a listen. In fact, I just posted something about that with a link to a track, to the first single, on my Facebook pages. So if you want to check that out, it's very cool. And it's Phil playing guitar and singing, Jimmy Johnson on bass, myself on drums. I'm not sure who's on keyboards actually, but it's very cool music. It's kind of like, to pigeonhole it, you'd have to say it's pop, jazz, funk. It's very interesting music, and really enjoyed playing that record.
And I think that's one of the key things is I mean, when you are doing drumming for lots of music or work for lots of different people, finding projects that you can actually kind of enjoy while you do is reflected in the output, in the final product. Because if you're not enjoying it, there's a certain feel to it, and sometimes it's picked up on. And then the other times where the joy is felt all the way through the recording and through the digital disbursement of Spotify or Sirius XM or whatever it is you're listening to. And people can just hear the joy of the musicians that are doing it.
Yeah, I guess that's on a subtle level, but by the same token, if I decide to take on a project or a track or tie a record, whatever it is, once I make that commitment, no matter how I really feel about the music, deep down, I'll always give it everything I've got. Because I'm putting myself out there. It's representing who I am. So I want to try and bring something to the music that will enhance it. And in some cases, depending on the level and quality of what I'm playing to, try and improve it. It's a harsh thing to say. Sometimes it's necessary.
No, it's very true. I think,
It depends on the project and the artist. Sometimes they may not be, there's a lot of artists that approach you to play that, and, it may be their first recording, and, there might be a little green, who knows, but nevertheless, there's something there, and you just try and elevate it as much as possible.
Yeah. And it's admirable and understandable that you'd want to put your best foot forward in all circumstances, both as a musician and as a person.
Yeah, I think that is important, and it helps you grow as well.
Well, as we start to wrap up, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you and follow you and keep up with what you're doing on social media and on the internet?
Of course. Well, of course, Facebook, Instagram. I'm posting a lot of clips on Instagram. I have a website, which is quite interesting, with a web store please support the music. We really need it now. I have some nice things on the web store, some T-shirts, CDs. We'll be putting up a bunch of new merch soon, a lot of digital downloads, some video content, etc. So keep your eye on that. Yeah, hopefully I'll see everyone out on the road in the very near future.
Well, Virgil, I really appreciate your time, and this has been wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Hammond. Enjoyed talking to you.
For more Beyond the Playlist, you can go to jhammondc.com. You can follow me on Twitter at jhammondc. You can email the show, jhammondc@gmail.com, or you can find the Facebook group, Beyond the Playlist with J. Hammond C. The theme music is by MFTJ, featuring Mike Keneally and Scott Shore. More recordings from MFTJ are available on Lazy Bones Records. See the link in the show notes for more fine releases from them. The cover art is by Phil Grube. If you like the show, you can support me at patreon.com/jhammondc. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Playlist.